when I did my residency at the Hospital University of Pennsylvania, where I spent most of my time was in the neonatal unit. And it was my first experience of being with a mother that had lost a child, being that presence, and she just wanted me to hold her hand.
Camille Turner isn't a doctor. She's a chaplain at the hospital at the University of Pennsylvania. Physical touch is a really important tool she uses to comfort her patients. But then the coronavirus pandemic hit and Turner's job got harder.
I walked out the room and the eyes that were on me from the other medical staff was like, what is she doing?
I'm Annette John Hall. This is The Why. I've always wondered, what's the difference between a chaplain and a pastor? Can you explain that for me?
There's a lot of similarities, and I would say that the biggest distinction is location. I serve in multiple communities. I travel from North Philadelphia to West Philadelphia to, you know, Center City. And most ministers, I would say, are located in a particular congregation, in a particular community. But our function and our caring of for souls is basically the same. In a non-denominational capacity, you have chaplains that serve in, you know, police stations. You have chaplains that serve in fire departments. There's a lot of showing up for individuals in some of the most difficult and tender moments of their entire lives. A lot of my experience in community, hospital communities, in nursing homes, in the veteran homes, yeah, we do have experiences of being with those that are dying, or being with family members as they're having to make decisions about next step in care, or maybe extubating a loved one and kind of having to deal and grapple with, you know, that kind of a situation.
Let me just step back, Camille, because I'm trying to understand, you know, just the rhythm of your job. You're on call at the hospital?
Yes, I'm on call at the hospital.
And when do you get called? Under what circumstances do you get called?
So there's a numerous amount of situations that a chaplain could be called to provide comfort. I've planned weddings for individuals in the hospital. I've help them plan their funeral. And it's someone that, you know, I've had to walk family members that have, loved one have passed, and I've had to walk them to the morgue because the morgue is at the very end of the hospital. And so that in and of itself requires a level of, I think, tenderness, because on the walk, what do you talk about? So yeah, the chaplain's role and responsibility is vast.
So what does it look like for you now? What adjustments have you made in order for you to do your work?
There's been a lot of adjustments. I mean, of course, we're wearing masks. The last time I was on call, I not only had a mask and gloves, but I also had a face mask that goes over my face, a clear face mask. And so, you know, the first time I did rounds with the mask was a little challenging. Was, you know, like okay, they cannot see me smile or return a smile. So my eyes can do a lot. I could smize. I could use my eyes to smile. But now I have to put a actual face guard over my mask. And so the kind of interloper that face mask becomes as you're trying to convey care and concern, that's been a bit challenging. I can remember the experience I had that kind of clicked it for me. I had just left a family that wanted the Irish blessing for their loved one who they just made a decision to extubate and to say goodbye. And they wanted something that was comforting not only to them, but to that loved one. So we all gathered around this loved one and we all said the prayer and I closed it. And at the end of it, there was just a lot of tears and a lot of emotions. And instinctively, I hugged the family members. And this was right at the beginning of, you know, protocols being changed and so many things changing in terms of how you engage family members. And I walked out the room and I, you know, the eyes that were on me from the other medical staff, the nurses, was like, what is she doing? And I kid you not, Annette, I did not, it didn't even dawn on me on that moment, like, what happened? Like, why were they staring at me? It was not until I went down into my office to do some notes that I kind of realized, oh, it's Corona. It's the virus. I hugged the family members while they were grieving, and I should not have done that. It's been a lot to grapple with.
We'll be right back. This is The Why.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Annette John Hall. I'm talking with hospital chaplain Camille Turner about how the coronavirus pandemic has changed the way she does her work. How is it different for you now when you go to the hospital and you're seeing a patient with the coronavirus versus a patient who doesn't have the coronavirus? I'm curious about what that looks like in light of the restrictions imposed. How does that affect, you know, you being able to comfort if you're not allowed to physically be there?
In a situation where it is not a corona patient, we are still called to go up and be with family. When there is a definite that there is a loved one that's going to die, then the family member can have that support of the chaplain to be with them. There is that 6 feet distance. And so we still have to create space between even caring for that loved one, even at the death, that you have to still stand 6 feet apart. Patients that are diagnosed with corona and are in the hospital, they're kind of in a floor that's designated for that. And so what we often do is that we work directly with the nurse and the nurse manager with those patients. And they convey, you know, through an iPad or an iPhone, something very specific around a prayer. If the priest needs to come, we do not enter those spaces directly at this point. But a lot of the work that we do is through the internet. It is through a phone call. It is through technology, using technology in a way that we haven't done before.
Can you tell me about some of the calls that you've done?
Well, the last call that I did, it was a patient that was in a COVID floor, and there was no thought of this patient dying. It was just, you know, this patient had to be isolated, and no family members. And so we basically made the phone call, and it was on an iPhone, and they just wanted prayer. And the nurse had to suit up and go into the room and bring the phone to the patient. And so the look on the patient's face, even over FaceTime, as you're praying, is indescribable. And I can imagine if we didn't have that technology, if we didn't have that access, that the anxiety that the patient was feeling alone would have been so much more difficult.
So what happens, Camille, like if you're doing a call and you have technical difficulties? Have you ever had a call freeze up on you?
I've not lost a call due to technical difficulties, but I've had some concerns where in the middle of a conversation, you know, a word or two was dropped out. And so in that situation, you know, I repeated the question and I asked for clarification. I don't know, it's just my worst fear. Even talking about it right now brings me a little bit of anxiety, because you don't want to be the last thing that is conveyed is some kind of misunderstanding. That's a moment you're not going to be able to get again.
You know, there's nothing like the human touch. It really is at the heart of what you do. Do you miss it? Do you miss the physical touch?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a human being. There is research and study that says that human touch actually does something to us that when we feel the warmth of somebody's hands or a hug, that there's something that happens within our own bodies and psyches. And so, yes, there's nothing that we're doing now that will be able to replace the physical touch. But I'm also aware that in the meantime, until we're able to create our new norm, that we have to find ways to connect and to share and to let others know that we're with them.
Do you think this pandemic will forever change the way you do your work?
A colleague and I was talking about this idea of creative resilience. How can we still show up and be there for others to show them love? What can we do? Maybe we can read a poem. There's a myriad of ways now that we're called to show up for others. You know, this is one song that I've sung, and it resonates with just about everyone. But it's this little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine, this little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine. No one's gonna blow it out, but I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine.
What kind of reaction does that song usually get?
Pre-COVID, it usually gets a squeeze of the hand. Oftentimes, folks join in. The other song that I think a lot of folks respond to is He's Got the Whole World in His Hands. He's got the whole wild world in His Hands. He's got you and me, baby, in His Hands.
He's got the whole world in his hands.
That's right.
Those kind of songs just make you feel like wanting to join in.
That's exactly right. And so folks are typically just joining in because it is what it's conveying is that we're not in this by ourselves.
Camille, thank you so much for sharing your work with us.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure.
That was hospital chaplain Camille Turner. The Why is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Binyakov, Alex Dern, and Kelsey Hansen, under the editorial direction of Katie Colinari. Hit me up on Twitter at AnnetteJH. Stay safe, be well. We'll see you tomorrow.